Hey there, classmates. Tune in to Middle Class Film Class every Monday and Wednesday for weekly movie news, streaming picks, and one deep dive review.
The Batman trailer. There was a teaser. There was a trailer. Trailer 1, trailer 2, final trailer. I don't know if it's the same one. How many trailers do we need?
Exactly.
Leave an email or a voicemail to join in the discussion.
Bullshit artist!
Yeah, buddy.
All right.
You're going full Danzig.
Right, I am. My trans
you have no power over me.
With the first, you were too terrified to go back in the water. Just when you were starting to think it was safe, along came the second. Now, nature's most terrifying creature has returned in an all-new adventure.
Welcome to the latest episode of the podcast That Wouldn't Die. I'm your host, Kevin. With me, as always, is Aaron.
Hello there.
This week, we're going to be discussing the horror classic, Jaws 3D, starring Dennis Quaid, Leah Thompson, Louis Gossett Jr., Simon McCorkindale. It's an all-star cast. Each week on the podcast That Wouldn't Die, we discuss guilty pleasures and forgotten classics of the horror and sci-fi genres with a comedic twist. Aaron, how are you doing?
Doing okay. I will soon have to return to the salt mines in about a week, and now absolutely. I'm going to burn through a week and a weekend preparing for return to the salt mines.
Now, by the salt mines, you mean the classroom, because you're a teacher.
I feel like the guards from The Wizard of Oz. That's my general attitude right now. Although we're all trying to put a positive spin. We're trying to stay positive without taking medication. So here we go.
It's not easy to do that, let me tell you, for goodness sake.
I literally have just like, hey, what's going on? How are you? Reach out to my other teachers. He's like, and all I get back is, we're going to try to have a positive spin this year. I'm like, okay, don't even have to ask. We're already anticipating the worst and doing self-talk.
That is correct. Those of you who are not teachers do not understand. It's not an easy job. Let me just put it out there.
People not think you get the holidays, you get summer off. You don't even know. It's like creating a one-woman show that has to be different every day, and you do it for 7.5 hours. They don't even do that on Broadway, my friend. It is emotionally and physically exhausting, and your children are terrible.
Well, summer's sweet.
The kids in my class are delightful, but parents these days, man, is a whole different kettle of fish.
Those are the kids you're referring to, the parents. Interesting.
It's a whole classroom of princes and princesses.
I get you. I get you.
You know what I'm saying? What? My Timmy wouldn't do that. I remember getting calls from parents because I had a kid just like randomly belching. This is high school. like a forced belch. The right. Third one, I was like, dude, you need to step outside. That day, I got a phone call from a parent saying there was some misunderstanding that little Timmy O'Toole didn't mean to belch. He just had a sour stomach. I said, mother, let me tell you. It wasn't that a little gas escaped. I had to go, well, I'll talk to him. Give me a F. Can you imagine calling a teacher?
Oh, when I
argue belching?
When I first started teaching, I just remember a kid would get in trouble for acting a fool, and you get an angry phone call because the kid would come home and be like, mom, I got in trouble today. And so now they're mad at. Whereas when I was a kid, you didn't come home and say, mom, I got in trouble today. Hell no. You were like praying that they didn't call the house to say you got into trouble today.
No. Bob used to always say, trouble at school, trouble at home.
Well, I remember that. And she used to say, and when good things happen at school, good things happen at home. And I'm like, no. I don't remember that second part of the equation.
How about every day you don't get a phone call? Where's the cake then?
Where's the cake? Absolutely. Oh my God.
This is like, this started to sound like a full boomer conversation.
It's a sad situation. Give us the 30-second synopsis of Jazz.
Of all that jazz.
By the way, there was a, this is totally off topic. I was on Twitter like a year ago and somebody made a point. Like I tried to convince my children that All That Jazz was a sequel to Jaws. Because it had, they're both, and I said, All That Jaws?
Uh-huh.
Good stuff. Anyway, this is Jaws 3D. Give us the synopsis, please.
Oh, well, so here's the hook. I couldn't find Jaws 3D. Because it's only Jaws 3D if it is, in fact, in 3D.
Right.
I kept skating by Jaws 3, and I was like, is Jaws 3 not, or 3D not available? So I had to do a Google search to figure out that Jaws 3 and Jaws 3D are the same.
That is correct. My bad. I should have mentioned that. Go ahead.
And how about this? I saw this at the theater with our Aunt Vicky.
Oh, in 3D?
In 3D. In 3D. It's one of those things I have a tendency to tilt my head. So the minute you tilt your head, everything goes out of focus. You have to sit rigidly still.
Right.
Without movement of your head. Maybe next time I'll bring like a C collar. So I it's like a Malcolm McDowell situation in a Clockwork Orange.
Absolutely. Clockwork Orange.
Basically, I don't even remember what happens in Jaws 2, but this is basically a part two to Jaws 1. The kids are grown up, and now they work at f***ing SeaWorld. And the idea that SeaWorld signed, allowed filming there, allowed to use their name, I'm guessing paid for all this free advertisement, right?
Absolutely.
Not going to happen now. SeaWorld's half canceled as it is. And of course, guess what happens? A shark shows up. But not just any shark, two sharks. Because they're like taking a playbook out of Orca. Another disastrous film we have not recorded. Where baby shark dies and a big shark shows up. And on top of all of this, SeaWorld at many times has had great white sharks that have then died. So the fact that they also added that in the movie is bizarro world. Bizarro marketing, bizarro PR. So anyway, you know, the main people are all fine, as you would expect. The end. I mean, there's so much ridiculousness. I do have three pages, but I gotta say, don't hate it. I don't hate it.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. I think it is gloriously insane.
It is fucking ridiculous. I mean, Dennis Quaid is out of control. He hadn't done Big Easy yet. That's when he really came into his own. But his character makes no sense. He is a designer, but spends all the day following around his marine biologist girlfriend instead of doing his job.
Pretty much.
He's basically, they reverse the role that he's the arm candy while she's just f***ing trying to work without my hovering. It was like Star 80 with the hovering boyfriend without the murder.
he was Eric Roberts.
Eric Roberts without the murder.
As far as we know, what happened the next day?
That's right. We don't know. Jaws 40K.
Look, when I was a child, I was convinced Dennis Quaid was like this huge A-list movie star. I was convinced. He was in all these movies I enjoyed. He was in Jaws 3D. He was in Dreamscape. He was in The Right Stuff. He was in a bunch of these things. Later, he's in like Big Easy and Interspace, which I appreciated at the time. And then you realize, oh, as an adult, you look back, you're like, oh, he was in kind of like B quality or C quality films that he was the star of. He wasn't in like Academy Award things.
But I gotta tell you, his apex, I think, is the Big Easy. I literally had a New Orleans theme wedding based on the Big Easy.
Because the Big Easy. Okay. Fair enough.
Oh my God. They're killing Indians. Why ain't you dead yet, Remy? There's some classic lines of Big Easy. And you get to see his butt.
Yes, you do.
If you haven't seen Big Easy, I'm sure it doesn't hold up, but the music's great. It's fun. It's all sarcast.
Well, and he's a handsome guy. He's a decent enough actor.
Yeah.
But it's not funny.
I wouldn't say decent actor in this, but he's coming to his own.
We're going to talk about this.
He needs a little bit more practice.
We're going to talk about this. I don't know if I saw this in the theater. I do not. I think I have a distinct.
You might have been a little young.
When
did this come out?
83-ish was like when all the.
So like my senior year of high school.
Like, you know, this came out in 3D. Friday the 13th Part 3 was in 3D. Amityville Horror 3D. Like the third one in the series, they were 3D for like this year and a half.
So you would have been about 8. So
I would have been 8 years old.
Probably yes. Didn't go see Jaws 3D.
I did not see it in the theater, but I have a distinct memory of going up to Lake Arrowhead with the family, and we're at the video store because this is what you do because there wasn't much else to do,
right.
And we were checking out movies to bring back to our house, and one of them I'm like, "Ooh, Jaws 3D. Is this in 3D?" And the lady said, "Yes, but we don't have the glasses."
But I rented it anyway.
So I have a feeling I did not rent it at that occasion. I always have to say, watching this movie, I really appreciate, this sounds ridiculous, the relationship between Dennis Quaid and his lady biologist. I mean, I think they seem very genuine, like almost ridiculously so in this setting. You know what I mean?
Am I crazy? You're out of your f-ing mind. He never works. He literally is only following her around.
Their interpersonal relationship. It's very sweet. Okay. You're kind of like, he's got a job for Venezuela to work on, I don't know, right? SeaWorld.
Who's he going to follow around there?
SeaWorld, Venezuela, evidently. But she's a marine biologist and is supposed to go work for the Scripps Institute of Marine Biology. So there's all sorts of stuff. You know, what are they going to do? I especially appreciate the moment where they're like, people are trapped in the undersea kingdom and there's a killer shark. Let's talk about our relationship. You know what? I will come with you to Venezuela. Oh, thank goodness. Now, can I get back to welding this so we can rescue this poor people?
Hey, no? First of all, that was ridiculous. She should be going to Scripps because you're going from crazy SeaWorld to a prestigious marine biology institute. And he's going to do what? Build SeaWorld Venezuela before the junta takes over? Pass.
Right, the Sandinistas.
Pass. I had a friend whose brother worked in Venezuela like 70s and 80s for the oil companies. And you had to be in a compound with fucking bodyguards and you never left the compound. It was 6 months on, 6 months off. No, that's not where we're going.
What about SeaWorld Venezuela? Even then? Sweet Jesus. This movie, watching it now, I still watch it and go like, I am struggling to figure out who the characters are and what their relationships are in many cases. Not the least which, this movie takes place at SeaWorld Orlando, which is 45 minutes from the ocean. So I don't know.
I did not know that.
Because literally, there's a big like lagoon in the middle of the SeaWorld, but there's like a gate that evidently leads to the ocean. I don't know if there's the Panama Canal.
Does it have like the locks, like the Panama Canal?
That's what it is. That must be what it is, and that's how the killer sharks enter the gigantic lagoon. I mean, I've been to SeaWorld, you know, San Diego. I have not been to SeaWorld Orlando. But is there a lot of, because there's multiple scenes of like people at the beach, basically. Like I'm in my trunks, we're like,
but
laying.
It doesn't look like the beach. And I was like, right. Is this filmed in the Great Lakes? Where the f*** is this film? Because, I mean, Lord knows, I haven't been to Florida, but I don't know. Here we don't have trees on the shore. You know what I mean? Because it's salt water.
I think they did. They filmed some in SeaWorld Orlando, as you can see, because they beat it over. There's like Shamu references. I mean, it is SeaWorld. I mean, this isn't like, you know, fake waterland of the greater Florida area. This is SeaWorld. But they filmed like the ocean area scenes in Pensacola.
Right. I just Googled that.
So there's
Navarre.
That. Let's let's just jump right in and get started. Aaron, highlights, what you got? You start first.
Well, of course, they still in, I mean, they've been pushing 3D since like Vincent Price and the Waxworks and all of that.
Absolutely.
With the little paddle with the ball, boom, boom, boom. That's the best way to promote your story, right?
Yes.
So they still don't know how to do 3D. So we got a lot of fish heads floating into your face and slowly turning.
A floating head fish head.
Yeah, nice. Boy, that is a chiller, that's for sure.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
I wrote that. That was my first note as well. And I liked when they showed the credits. It's all suggested by the novel Jaws by Peter Benchley. Suggested? What the hell does that mean? I don't think Peter Benchley is like, please, next story should be in SeaWorld.
And just FYI, like when Jaws came out, I read all of Peter Benchley's novels. It's exciting, except for there's a weird one with the pirates.
The Island. Yeah, he wrote
Michael Caine.
They were all, he was like the Michael Crichton of the time, where it was like, Jaws was a hit, so we're doing The Deep, we're doing The Island, we're doing whatever. Any book
perfect
he wrote.
Perfect summertime reading. Read some old, bust out some old Peter Benchley, and get it at the used bookstore for like $1.
Right.
And then you're on. Did you notice there's a crazy character that gets killed that looks freakishly like Billy Joel?
Are you talking about the really buff guy with the mustache?
He had like the curly hair. I was like, is this how Billy Joel visualizes himself?
When the shark busts into the lagoon, it knocks into the gate that separates the lagoon from the open ocean. This guy who's like a mechanic or an engineer type, who's strangely like muscular, like he is like for no reason, he is like a bodybuilder, and he has a big old fireman's mustache and Billy Joel hair.
He looks like I said, how Billy Joel would like to visualize himself in
absolutely.
The early 80s.
And
I was like, what?
He goes in the water without a tank or anything. And no tools that I could see, and is trying to put the gate back on the track.
You're just gonna put them together!
Using his super strength. he's like Aquaman or something. And he is the first victim of Scary the Shark. So there you go. Very Shelby was his name or something like that.
What a terrible name.
There's multiple scenes of the drunken girlfriend showing up at work. He didn't come back last night. Here's all his crap. You tell him he got to move out. And it was literally like, Dennis Quaid's like, I haven't seen him, I don't know. And he picks up the guy's stuff, and it's like his passport, his tax returns, his ID. It's like he didn't bring the stuff with him to work even. He left all this stuff, his
and
credit cards.
And why Dennis Quaid know who she is, he is, when supposedly he's the f***ing architect or designer? Why wouldn't he be in an office somewhere instead of walking around with OP shorts and flip-flops all day, air day? Because I gotta imagine SeaWorld is like the SeaWorld here where there's hundreds of people working there.
There must be thousands of people working at SeaWorld, but it's a small town, Orlando. Let me tell you, where you can just go to the local
bar.
This
is a small town.
You work at the bar, and it's like the waitress knows that you work with her husband. And oh, by the way, we also know the girl who is part of the water skiing show and is also part of the dancing show. It's like Leah Thompson, very talented. They all know each other. First name, but hey, join us, please. We were good friends. So yeah, it's a small town.
I have to say, there's a freakishly low body count in this.
Yes. I watched this with my kids. And then there's like three deaths at the very beginning, hour 45.
Yeah.
And then like two more people die. And that's it.
Yeah. No one suggests closing Orlando. So
no, they did not.
What's going on?
It's upsetting. It's upsetting how few people...
It made it a little boring. I'm like, there was like no risk is what was happening. In the original Jaws, all you had to do is dip a toe and you're going to lose it. Like a swarm of piranha were going to come, except it's a giant 30-foot great white shark.
This movie follows, like you said, the further adventures of the sons of Roy Scheider. In the first movie, they were very young. I think one was like 5 and one was like 8 or something. In the second one, they're a little bit older. They're like high
like
school
28
age.
And I don't know, 21 now all of a sudden.
Right.
But let me jump back. You were talking about Billy Joel. We're going to call him Billy Joel Armstrong.
You were talking about Billy Joel Armstrong, by the way. Go ahead.
He's down there trying to lock up the things, but it's pitch black. And he and he's just jumping in the water. And then you need a padlock in case the fish try to break out, or like they make a prison key or something, or do the seals or whatever they have in Florida work it with their paws, or do they pay otters or the manatee? Why does it need to be a padlock? Why not like just like a piece of wire?
Well, here's the thing, as we discover to our horror, there are late night burglars who leap the fence with their inflatable raft to try to steal the good coral from the lagoon because they can get $200 for it in Miami. So, and this is what people do. They break into SeaWorld late at night, very easily, I might add, and try to steal stuff for local wildlife, sea life collectors. Who the hell knows? Makes no GD sense.
What the? There's no coral off the coast of Florida? It seems more likely that a bunch of teenagers on meth are going to hop it and just float around and drown. That seems more likely. They're like, I got this fentanyl that I've heard so much about on the news. Let's go float around SeaWorld and see how this stuff works.
Well, what's funny is we discover Billy Joel Armstrong's corpse later. We never discover what happens to the two burglars. There's never a leg that washes up on shore. And the shark is nice enough to literally come up after eating both of the burglars, come up and then eat the raft. I mean, all evidence. We're taking care of all the evidence. So you'll never know what happens.
They're always like super genius smart. They're plotting, they're planning. It's like the Mega or what, the Meg.
Where like
the Mega Millions. Woof woof.
So we haven't even talked about Louis Gossett Jr., Academy Award winner. Louis Gossett Jr. is in this. He's Calvin Bouchard. He's the guy who owns, they make it seem like he owns SeaWorld.
Right.
Not just this place, but all the SeaWorlds. So he's, you know, their big new attraction is the underwater village or whatever it is. It's a series of tunnels in the lagoon where you can walk through and you can see the fish swimming around, blah, 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 blah. So there's the grand opening is occurring, and he has invited his friend, and this is where it gets really sketchy, Philip Fitzroyce, who...
Of course. That is like something you would name your cat. Here comes my cat, Philip Fitzroyce.
And you have cats that you should name Philip Fitzroyce right now. And his manservant, Johnny or Fred or whatever his name is.
Johnny Reno.
And they don't really, it's like, is he a big game hunter? Is he a wildlife photographer?
What he was Crocodile Dundee of Central Florida.
Right. Well, I mean, they're both very British, so it's a British thing. So much so that the manservant is constantly referring to his boss as his governor. My governor will take care of that for you.
So fucking ridiculous.
They just describe him as an adventurer, which I don't even know if that does that pay the bills. I don't know how this works.
Is he a soldier of fortune? Is he in Ukraine right now fighting the Russians? What's happening? Who is
it's
he?
It's something.
Because cracky.
They said that he rammed like a Japanese whaling vessel. And he says, well, they ruined my shot, you know. So, right. But later they're like, well, we've got the shark in there. How about I go in there and just kill it? I'll just kill your shark for you, if you will. And they're like, it's what we do, governor. And it's just like,
is this supposed to be the 80s version of Quint? Is that what it is?
I guess. It makes no never mind to me. Anyway, so the sons in this movie, you have Mike, played by Dennis Quaid, who is some sort of undersea engineer/architect, something along those lines. His younger brother, who is traumatized by the events of the first two movies, he's like a student of something in Colorado and has come to visit for some reason and is terrified of the water until, you know, skiing performer slash dancing girl.
Until sex is offered.
Leah Thompson, in her first role, shows up and seduces him into getting in the water. There's a lot of scenes of people getting in the water late at night, which that's never a good move. I wouldn't do that now.
She had the magic vagina that cures all phobias.
I will say probably a run-of-the-mill vagina would fill the bill as well. I don't think it has to be magic. So there's there. It's a bizarre little subplot with the brother and Leah Thompson, I guess, having kind of a budding romance. Who the hell knows what's happening? But they figure out that there's a great white, and there's this whole thing where they capture the shark, and they talk about how, you know, because they're debating, should we blow it up? And Fitzroy literally has grenades that he's like pulling out. You just have grenades that you just carry with you?
It's like a 6-foot shark. So I need to blow it up with a grenade.
With a grenade! They should we blow it up? And Bess Armstrong, who plays Catherine Morgan, who is Dennis Quaid's love interest, she says, no, I'm a marine biologist. We should save it and put it on display, you know. And this is a true thing. Great whites, you can't really keep them in captivity. They die.
Yeah, SeaWorld has tried over and over again, and they always die.
They always die.
Always makes the news, and it always makes them look bad.
That's right. What's that? The movie Blackfish tells us that they're not treating the Shamu very well either. Very sad. So they capture it, and of course, you realize this shark is not nearly impressive enough to be the actual shark of this movie. You're right. It's like 6.5 feet long. Now, in the real world, that's a scary shark. But in the world of this of these movies, that's not nearly impressive enough. Of course,
it's a scary shark while it was in the lagoon, but now it's safe enough that me and my friend are just going to take it for a walk. What's going to stop it from coming out and just taking a bite out of you? I was like, are you people mentally ill? What's happening?
Yes, multiple times they jump in the tank with the killer shark, which, as far as they know, have killed, you know, people. I mean, they think they've eaten Shelby at this point, right? They're fishing Shelby's, you know, limbs out of its gullet. So,
I think I know the problem of why they keep dying, because literally they put the 6-foot shark in like a kiddie pool where its nose touches one side and its tail is touching the other, and they're just like spinning it like a spinner.
That's correct.
That might be the problem of why they're just not making it.
I didn't talk about this, but I got to mention this. When we meet Leah Thompson in the bar, she's playing a game called Standoff, where the rules are not fully articulated. Have you even heard of this game before? It's like you kind of stand facing each other and kind of push hands like you're high-fiving each other. Do you know anything about this?
No. I've seen the one with the knife and the fingertips. I've seen dice games at bars, but I've never seen 2-foot-tall Leah Thompson trying to knock down 7-foot Wilt Chamberlain, you know?
It's always
I've never
Wilt
seen that at a bar.
So, yes, Wilt Chamberlain makes a cameo in this one. She plays it with Mike's younger brother, and he fools her by saying, oops, my fly is undone. And so she looks, and then he pushes her over, and so he wins. And then he goes back and she's like, oh, you know, he tricked me. And Dennis Quaid says something, oh, the old crotch trick. That's his best move. That's his best move.
That's the best line. That's the best line right there. Oh, my God.
That should have been on the poster. Anyway, very strange. What else you got?
One thing I noticed is it is very of the time. I mean, the fashion is fabulous. If you want to know what people dress like in the 80s, they never can duplicate it. They have movies and shows, even the 70s show. It was never quite right, right?
Right.
So you got to go, look, this is some classic 80s dress. headbands.
Oh, yeah.
And then I saw a Panama Jack. Remember, our sister was a cabana girl at one time during the 80s, and Panama Jack was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
You had to wear Panama Jack shirts. The 80s was a decadent time. So not just, you couldn't just put olive oil on yourself while you're sitting at the resort. They sold something called mink oil.
Wait a
mink
minute.
Oil.
Were people putting olive oil? When they would put olive oil, not sunscreen or suntan lotion.
No.
Olive oil.
Olive oil, mineral oil. And you lay on a reflective surface like a solar oven to get your shady parts. It was a different time.
Did you misspeak when you said mink oil that comes from the anal glands of the mink?
M-I-N-K. They sold something called mink oil, which I have to assume is just a big cup of squeezins.
It's a squeezins. I ain't rubbing that on anything.
But it was expensive. So, yeah, it was, I had to go to training for microaggressions, where as is required, and one of the things that they showed was, remember the, who had it, was the Savage Tan, Tropical Blend, Tropical Blend Oil, where you got the Savage, the Dark and Sleek is the Savage Tan.
Okay.
Get it fast with Tropical Blend. That was just oil. And they always had some chick who was clearly white, but as dark as humanly possible. So they're like
George Hamilton kind of thing?
Savage Tan, microaggression. There you go.
Microaggression? I wasn't, that's a term.
I had to have a whole workshop on it. It's required by our district.
Interesting. Okay, fair enough.
Because you're implying that people with dark skin are in fact savages.
That is true.
Savage Tan.
This is a thing that was occurring back in the 80s? People were wearing Savage Tan?
Yes. It was a thing in 17 magazine, all the teeny bopper magazines, because as our mother used to say, you're too pale, it's unhealthy, go out into the sun.
All right, go become
parents encourage their children to crawl out of their air-conditioned houses and lay prone under the glaring sun until your skin became like pork rinds.
And we grew up in Palm Springs, where it was regularly 150 degrees out. So this is child abuse is what we're talking about.
Well, it's when you've been in the house too long. Don't come back for 2 hours. I'm locking the doors. That's how we rolled. I'll be locking the doors.
Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Please leave me alone.
Can we talk
Anyway, that's my tale of Panama Jack. Because I saw a Panama Jack shirt while I was out and about a couple of weeks ago. I was like, is that a thing? Is it coming back? It's like a dude with a pith helmet and dark sunglasses.
Panama Jack.
Remember
absolutely.
That?
I mean, this was definitely a time where we're still kind of, there's like some remnants of that, the 70s fashion still kind of hanging around.
Right.
But the burgeoning 80s started to kick off with like the short 100%, shorts.
Yeah. Short shorts, eyes odd.
Yep.
Got a lot of pop collars. You got some Ray-Bans going on, which was the eyewear for an entire decade.
Yep. Dennis Quaid was wearing Topsiders. He was ready for he was ready for the day.
Shoes without socks. I had a pair of Sperry Topsiders. I'm sure they weren't. They were whatever discount
crap
version
siders.
Of it. Crap siders. And I was rocking it because you never know you're going to hop on a boat living in the f***ing desert.
You never know. Deck shoes. Absolutely.
Deck shoes.
Can we talk about every time they showed some sort of vessel or creature swimming in the ocean underwater, it was the worst 3D you've ever seen. Where it's like we were laughing like in the climactic scene where Jaws is rushing towards the control center, and they're like, oh, in slow motion, Dennis Quaid going, no, the thing, the tail was not moving. It was like a torpedo just coming at the screen. It was just.
If a torpedo went like 2 miles an hour.
Right, exactly. Louis Costa
so
Jr. looking
slow.
Horrified. Yeah. This movie loved
slow
motion.
Get the F out of there. How about that? Why isn't that an option?
No, the 3D. Again, keep in mind, I watched it like you did. It was, if it's not 3D, it's just called Jaws 3. But it constantly has those things where it's obviously this was meant to be 3D. This was meant to be floating in front of you. And it was just lousy. It was lousy.
I have to tell you,
please.
Every time I go to an aquarium or even one of those places where it just is a panel, like you go inside and it's like a viewing area, I'm always very concerned because there's always water on the floor. There's always water on the floor.
Yes.
So because of Jaws 3D, I'm just waiting for the cracking of the ground. Yes, they're always fucking leaking.
Well, and here's the other thing. So there's scenes of like random tourists who are just nameless, faceless characters just roaming around in the undersea tunnels. And constantly it's like there's a scene where somebody goes, oh my God, it's a shark. Yeah, you're in an aquarium.
You're in an aquarium.
Newsflash. Newsflash. Okay. I mean, yes, it's a shark. Now, turned out they were right. And it's a killer shark on the loose if you're a random tourist.
I'm guessing they're wrong more than they are right. But I have to say, I mean, that undersea world, that just reminds me of Vegas. I really want this all to happen in Vegas.
Yes.
You know how they have those tunnels? Or quite frankly, where was I? I was at the Golden Nugget last week. And at the Chard House, it's just an aquarium, right?
Right.
And the other side of that giant aquarium is by the pool. So multiple casinos have that. What if there was a movie like The Happening where the fish are all talking to each other at the various casinos in Las Vegas, and they're like, this is it. They're going down. Because right. They also, like I said, they have those tunnels you can walk through at some of the hotels. What if all of a sudden the fish all stopped and they're all like staring in at us at the Chard House?
That would be
scary.
And
then you start seeing a little leak. See?
Then I'd say, fish! At that point.
I would see that before I see another Sharknado.
Oh, absolutely. No
sharks.
Question.
Las Vegas.
Exactly. But again, you have to kind of come up with a reason as to why people are swimming in the shark tank. That's the only issue. I just go for a swim. I'm stealing some coral. I'm here late at night. I've broken into the casino only for the coral. No question.
All right.
We talked about how there's an hour 45 where no one is killed. There's a lot of near misses. There's a lot of, it's the ski spectacular where there's like those pyramids of people skiing on top of each other. And you'll see a huge fin come up behind them. Somebody turns around and goes, oh my God. And they all fall into the water and nobody gets eaten. No, they
and
all
by climb. The way, we don't have that on the California SeaWorld. It reminds me of, it's gotta be a Florida thing. Cause it looks like a Go-Go's video from back in the day.
It does. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like the SeaWorlds I've been to do not have like skiing stunt spectaculars, which this movie showed. And there's no scene where people are just lounging at the beach at the SeaWorld.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I'm not paying $35 to go lay at the beach at SeaWorld.
Exactly. Exactly. Case in point. And of course, after the baby, quote unquote, shark dies, then they realize, because then they find Shelby's half-eaten body, and Bess Armstrong runs in. It's bite radius is a yard and a half across. And Fitzroy goes, that's a shark that would be 35 feet long. That's shocking.
And then, of course, Okie lovey.
We didn't even talk about how Philip Fitzroy, played by Simon McCorkindale, he is most famous, to me at least, as being the main character, the titular character in the 80s TV show Manimal, where a guy turns into various animals every episode. Like he turns into a panther or a hawk or something. And not a cartoon.
Oh, he's a shapeshifter. Is he Navajo? Is he going to eat my bones?
I think
because
it was something...
that would be the Manimal that I would sign up for.
they talked about he visited like Tibet or something and learned the secrets of becoming a manimal. And it was only on for one season.
What a great.
And it was so derided. I think David Letterman every week would talk about manimal and how horrible it was. Poor it's Simon McGorkindale. So now, of course, the moment they realize, oh, damn, the mama shark is still in the lagoon, immediately the mama shark pops up. It's like, well, now that here's my cue. So now I'm going to come. Now I'm going out and I'm going to attack people full blown. The skiers. One girl, this time,
it's personal.
That was this time. It's personal. That was the tagline for the sequel, Jaws: The Revenge, that came after this.
Oh, Jesus. So
there
Christ.
You go.
Because it wasn't personal before.
It was not personal. Well, I always talk about how in Death Wish 4 is called Death Wish 4, The Crackdown, because he's not taking any more of your shit. he had a soft hand up till now.
Now he's not only tracking you down, killing you, he's killing six generations of your family. Absolutely. He's going back in time to kill your great-grandmother, who was a saint.
Absolutely. Who is a saint. Exactly. That's exactly what he's doing. That's Charles Bronson's way. At this point, there are long extended scenes of Dennis Quaid running across SeaWorld, screaming at people, get out of the water! Get out of the water!
They have to throw that in.
Absolutely. I mean, again, this is SeaWorld, for God's sakes. Could they not just have made an announcement over the loudspeaker? It's got to be Dennis Quaid running from beach to beach. Because again, there's multiple beaches across the huge SeaWorld landscape. But again, did a good job. No one was eating.
Is he also, when he's designing SeaWorlds, where he's employed full-time on their staff, even though it's clearly already designed built, they also don't have security. So that's a little known part of his contract.
Absolutely. Well, multiple times he's running across, like, here's some crazy SeaWorld show, and he's grabbing the microphone out of somebody's hand. Get out of the water! Stop the skiing exhibition, for God's sakes, while there's like pantomime and dancing girls like next to him.
Not the SeaWorld I know from my youth.
Absolutely not, for God's sakes. Later in the movie, Fitzroyce comes up with a plan of, because they said, oh, well, you know, the Big Mama has been hiding in one of the venting tunnels or some weird tunnel.
In the cooling tower? What's the venting tower? Is it also a nuclear reactor?
It could be. Who's to say? It's self-contained. Which, I mean, again, I'm not a shark expert by any stretch of the imagination, but they talk about how sharks really cannot back up. They are not built to back up.
Right. Okay? They go forward.
They can only swim forward. So if you swim into one of these tunnels, you're not swimming back out. If you're one of these sharks, this is an issue. So he decides, I'm going to be live bait. So he goes into the tunnel to try to coax the shark in back to get him. And of course, the shark does. And it was all predicated on he has a rope that he can pull out to pull himself to safety, essentially. Spontaneously, the rope just breaks. For absolutely, and like unties. I'm like, maybe do a square knot next time. I don't know what your plan is. And he is swallowed alive by the shark, like Jonah and the whale, essentially.
It's so freaking ridiculous.
It's the most ridiculous thing. Go ahead.
So why isn't the shark can't back up? He has now swallowed Hobo Joe. So if it can't back up, it can't move forward. It would just drown. It would just be dead because sharks breathe by moving, constantly moving. Sharks don't lay down, pull up a blanket, and take a nap.
That's correct. So they when the shark swam into the tunnel, they closed the huge gate, sealed it, and like, woohoo, we've won. Oh, Fitzroyce is dead. So sad. But we've won. And then Louis Gossett Jr. is like, you know what? Let's drain that tunnel and we'll drown the shark. And they're like, good idea. So they start to do that, and the shark, some might argue miraculously, swims backwards with the force to smash through the gate.
With its tail. Yeah.
Crunch, so crunch. Until the gate bursts open. Again, look, this is a National Geographic. I get it. This is not a documentary. But this was very ridiculous.
It was very ridiculous. I mean, they could have just had it like flop around like this and bust the seams side by side. At least something. I don't know. But I was like, what? Because after Jaws, the whole world is fascinated by sharks. So by the time this came out, everyone is a shark expert.
Yes.
There couldn't be any more movies or documentaries about sharks. So we all know it doesn't swim backwards.
There was a funny scene that I didn't mention earlier. When they're swimming, walking through the tunnel underneath, you know, there's fish swimming by, tourists are looking out. When they discover Shelby's body, it kind of floats up spontaneously by one of the windows for God knows what reason. There's a close-up of a tourist literally pressing their face up against the glass, face-to-face screaming.
Ah! Ah! It was so stupid.
It's like, good, why are you doing special that? Effect. So bizarre. I had to mention it. It's apropos of absolutely nothing, but it is so bizarre and ridiculous. Sweet
it's
Jesus.
Apropos of the fact how ridiculous this is.
No but, question.
But ridiculous that you can just goof on it. All the underwater effects are so terrible.
Terrible.
So terrible. I mean, Jaws was like almost 10 years before the original Jaws, and it was terrifying. Mm-hmm. This is all like, I don't even know what they were doing.
Well, it's basically when you see the shark, most of the time it's kind of like, it's either a weird drawing that looks like it's swimming across the screen, or it's kind of a Ray Harryhausen Clash of the Titans claymation.
It's like shark. 1950 Voyage to the Bottom of the whatever quality. It's 1950s right. quality.
Where it's
all like shitty miniatures, not like cool, good miniatures.
No,
just all shit.
It's
shit
piss poor.
Shit.
It's piss poor.
Poor.
When the shark earlier in the movie attacks the underwater tunnels and causes leaking, they're like, oh, seal it up, seal it up. And I'm like, you've got people trapped down in the tunnel. We're sealing it up. And at one point, the people who are trapped in the tunnel, they're in this one little area. And they're like, it's like the docent or the tour guide or whatever she is. She's like, hey, everybody, you need to breathe more shallow because this is the only oxygen we have. I don't think that would be very reassuring to the people trapped in the underwater tunnel. Call me. This is the only oxygen we have? What kind of place is this?
This is, there's no escape plans. It's like, maybe they find you, maybe they don't.
Maybe they find you, maybe they don't. It's ridiculous. It's madness. What else you got?
Let's see. Besides the shitty effects, I can't read my handwriting. Oh, I get the girl gets face planted. You already talked about that. The slow motion shake. Breaks glass. The slow motion shark breaks the glass. And it was so shitty. It was like. Like they, I put a piece of clear plastic and moved it around, and that was supposed to. I literally, this cat is sitting on the edge here, and like stared at me, and then proceeded to just basically almost fall over onto his side.
Goodbye, cruel world.
Goodbye, cruel world. It's enough. Yeah, I think that I'm about it.
So there's the scene that you're talking about. The client. First of all, let me talk about this. Why are the chief engineer and the chief marine biologist investigating the death of people in this? Why are they going down in their water submarine looking
Where's the f***ing Coast Guard?
Or how about you call the cops? I mean, whoever, call somebody. We've talked about this before. In movies, it's always the least qualified people who are like, don't worry, I'll head up the investigation. No need to bring in outside authority. We got this. Sweet.
There is one note I have. There's a POV of the dude being chewed.
Yes.
Where he's inside of the shark's mouth.
Yes.
And he's not even swallowed, and he's just chilling there.
He's fully alive. He's fully alive.
Even at the end, know how he died because he's sitting there with his tank. He hasn't been chewed. He's fully sitting here like this, halfway down the throat. Why isn't the shark choking to death?
Yes. We gotta talk about this.
It would be like shoving a trout down your throat and let it just lay there in your mouth.
That's correct. It's ironically just like that. At the end of the climactic moment, as you said, the slow motion 3D shark smashes into the glass of the control room where all the main characters are. And water rushes in. Bess Armstrong and Dennis Quaid put their masks on because they were still in full scuba gear. Louis Gossett Jr. grabs the lady who works in the control room and leaves his nephew to be eaten by the shark, which...
You got to do what you got to do. I often said they should have left Carl. Left Carl right. from The Walking Dead.
You know it's his nephew because he derisively calls him nephew earlier in the movie. The shark comes in, just grabs nephew, who... like obligingly seems to jump in the shark's mouth for some goddamn reason.
I've had enough of this world. Let me crawl inside.
He gets chomped. And then the shark is kind of at the window opening its mouth and you see dead Fitzroy's. Because what happened is he took off his tank when he was in the tunnel fighting trying to hit the shark with his tank. So now I guess he drowns. But not before he pulls out his grenade, puts it in his hand, and then expires, does nothing with it, lays there. So even as the shark is
eating
the nephew.
So the shark is eating nephew and the chunks bypass Fitzroy and he still is right here.
That's correct. Even as he's eating nephew, Fitzroy is still hanging out in the mouth. And not down the throat. It's only like you see just a hand in the back of the throat. You see the full body of Fitzroy hanging there. Now eat something else while you're doing that. Yes, that's basically what was happening. Had the grenade in his hand. So Dennis Quaid takes a piece of metal that he just finds laying on the floor, I don't know, pool cue, something, and keeps trying to stick it in the shark's mouth to try to pull the pin. Jeez, I don't know. I'm almost getting it.
Luckily for him, the shark's sitting still and waiting for him to do that.
Because
he's like, I can't live this life as a monster. Go ahead. I'll just wait here patiently while you figure this out.
Take your time. Yes. Bess Armstrong's on one side doing nothing. Dennis Quaid is on the other side of the shark's head with a piece of like a crook, like he's a shepherd or something, trying to get in there. And he gets it. Again, a grenade goes off 3 feet away from them. And they're fine.
Everybody should be dead. Everybody should be dead.
Everybody should be dead. So it blows up. And then you see in the 3D, you see the jaws kind of, you see like guts and viscera fly out at the audience. And then the jaws, like the teeth, kind of like come together as a kind of a final denouement of the 3D like this. So that was good stuff. Dennis Quaid and Bess Armstrong swim to the surface, and Dennis Quaid's like, yeah, I guess everybody else got out okay. Well, not everybody, Dennis. What about a poor old nephew? Poor old nephew. Very upsetting.
Dennis Quaid is happy that Dennis Quaid got out.
That's right. Well, then there was like, what happened to our friendly dolphins, Cindy and Sandy, that we've met multiple times? And I guess only one of them shows up for a while. Where's Sandy? Sandy! Sandy! And then the other dolphin comes up. And there we are. Oh, happy day.
Where were these bitches when shark attacks were going on? Dolphins are known for attacking sharks. They said, fuck this. Maybe this is our ticket to freedom. And then when they saw how it was turning, they showed up at the end. Hey, everybody okay?
It was Day of the Animals. Absolutely. Wild Sea Life Edition. We didn't mention
Sea Life Edition / Las Vegas.
That's what it is. We didn't mention how Leah Thompson was on the bumper boats with the boyfriend when Jaws hits the bumper boat, sending them both flopping into the water. The shark bites her seemingly and gives her just a little scratch on the thigh. And she's fine. I mean, they go to the hospital because I guess, you should do some, get an infection or something.
Put some peroxide on that and gave her a Band-Aid and some ibuprofen.
And that was it. And they're fine. Everybody else is fine. So
we should have lost a leg. You got to get some skin in this show.
Let me count down who died in this movie.
Nobody okay? You give a shit about.
Nobody. Well, that's not entirely true. Shelby, Billy Joel Armstrong gets eaten at the beginning of the movie. Two nameless burglars stealing coral towards the beginning of the movie, they're never referenced again. Their lives are a mystery. What happened to Sam and Sue? We don't know. We never see them again. Fitzroyce is swallowed alive and eventually dies from drowning, I guess, at the back of the shark's mouth. Okay. And then eventually he's blown up. And then Nephew, who apparently has no other name. I don't know if they ever call him anything else. He is bitten in half by the shark in the last 30 seconds of the movie. That's it. Five deaths. Not enough. There should have been
None of it is scary. None of it is creepy. It's not like the original one where you're just out swimming and then, You can't imagine yourself. You know, in Jaws, you could imagine yourself being the swimmer out there.
Absolutely.
There's no time in this movie where you could possibly imagine that any of this would ever happen to you. You will watch this movie, sleep like a baby, and swim in the ocean the next day with no worries, no fear.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, and then the movie ends. So, and I guess, you know, Mike and Catherine go off to Venezuela happily ever after. Who the hell knows? It's a mystery. We'll never know the answer. Any other thoughts and feelings, or shall we go behind the scenes?
Let's go behind the scenes, my friend.
Just 3D. According to the book Roy Scheider, a film biography, Roy Scheider was effectively forced to do Jaws 2, basically, because he withdrew from the Deer Hunter, essentially. Like he'd agreed to be in the Deer Hunter, withdrew, so they said, well, you owe us. So he agreed to be in Jaws 2.
Oh, dude, you should have done the Deer Hunter. You would have had an Academy Award. Bad choice. This is your punishment. Now we're going to ruin your career.
Absolutely.
Boom.
So he deliberately agreed to make Blue Thunder this year so that he'd be unavailable to appear in Jaws 3. There you go. Initially, filmmakers planned to have very few pop-out effects where objects extend beyond the screen in 3D. But studio executives ultimately pressured them to include more, worried that audiences would leave disappointed and spread bad word of mouth if the 3D was used mainly for depth. So there you go. That's where you get the weird floating fish head.
Yeah.
When they pitched this movie, it was originally going to be a comedy titled National Lampoon's Jaws 3 People Zero.
That would have been genius. What the hell?
Plan.
What happened to that? That would have been genius.
Yes. Joe
well,
Dante
as it was. It was a comedy, as it turned out.
I know. Joe Dante was attached as the director, but when Steven Spielberg heard about this, he threatened to walk from his deal with Universal. So,
fucking Spielberg.
So they basically...
you're getting the bad finger, Spielberg-o.
Right. So he didn't want any connection to this at all. So basically they took a script for an unrelated shark movie, truly, where a shark swims up a river and gets trapped in a lake, a freshwater lake, and then shit happens and turns that.
So wait a minute. Let's put a pause there.
Please.
They're still allowed to use the word Jaws.
Yes.
Spielberg only objected if it was a comedy?
Evidently, yes.
What the? Come on, friends.
I agree.
I would have signed up for that shit. Would Bill Murray have been in it?
Maybe. Who's to say? In a later interview, Dennis Quaid referred to this movie as...
Stop.
What?
What if Bill Murray played the Quint character?
There is no Quint character in this movie. You talking about Fitzroyce?
No. I'm reimagining it.
Oh, the original Jaws movie?
Yes. But you make it as a National Lampoon comedy. What if Bill Murray played... Quint.
I think that would be a horrible idea.
It's a comedy.
That?
Who else would have done it?
Okay.
Not John Belushi.
In this bizarro scenario, perfect. Sounds great. Chevy Chase could be Brody, Sheriff Brody. Yeah.
No, Chevy Chase would be the Dreyfus character.
Oh, he'd be Hooper.
He'd be Hooper.
Well, then who?
So who would be Roy Scheider?
John Belushi.
He's too short and fat. He could be the sheriff. He could be the sheriff.
Garrett Morris.
It would be Goldblum.
Joe, Jesus. Here it comes. It's all gone off the rails. Sweet Jesus. In a later interview, Dennis Quaid referred to this movie as, "I was in Jaws what?" Yeah. And he admitted that this was the height of his cocaine problem and that every frame that you see him in, he was heavily loaded on coke.
Which that would explain the high energy all the way through.
Get out of the water. Get out. It's kind of like what you said earlier, that he is basically a passive observer to what's going on in this movie. He does not force the action at any time. Right? It's either Fitzroy.
He could disappear, really. He could disappear.
Right.
And you still have a movie. All you need is someone else with a stick with a hook. The
studio made them add the brothers to the script to connect it to the other Jaws movies. So there you go.
It does seem to be an afterthought.
It absolutely is. This was Leah
Thompson. We can't have a woman doing the lead in this.
Absolutely. Well, she's the expert.
I know.
This is Leah Thompson's feature film debut, and she lied about her resume to get this one, claiming to have been in other
movies
and TV shows. As one does. This movie, even though this movie made a considerable amount of money, it was panned by critics, as we will soon discuss. So a few years later, when they made the sequel, Jaws the Revenge, they basically ignore the events of this movie entirely. And literally kind of, that's why it's not Jaws 4. They just call it Jaws the Revenge. Like they're hoping you'll forget that Jaws 3 ever occurred.
So what's the revenge? The grandfather of the shark now says, oh, vendetta, vendetta.
Basically, it makes no GD sense. It makes no, because the sharks always die. So it's not like, you know, oh, you pissed me off. But it's something like the shark follows them from Martha's Vineyard down to the Caribbean to chew on them. And what's interesting, and Michael Caine.
Which shark?
Another shark.
Just any old shark.
Any old shark will do. Michael Caine is in this one, which this was hip deep in Michael Caine is just write me a check. Write me a check. I will be in your movie. And interestingly enough, Jaws the Revenge made less money than this one and actually has a worse critic response than this one. Shockingly enough. Good time. Let's talk about the cast and crew, shall we? Joe Alvis was the director. This is the only movie he ever directed.
They forced him out of the country after this. He's living in Uruguay now.
He was a production designer, and they just kind of bumped him up because no one else wanted to do it. So there you go. Good times had by all. Dennis Quaid played Mike Brody, the eldest son of Roy Scheider, I guess. You know him from Far From Heaven, The Day After Tomorrow, Frequency, Inner Space, Dreamscape. The list goes on and on.
The Big Easy.
The brother of Randy Quaid, which is always shocking to me.
Very shocking.
Bess Armstrong played Dr. Catherine Morgan. She's the love interest of Dennis Quaid's character. You know her from Jaws 3D. She was in My So-Called Life. She played Claire Danes' mother. She was in something called The Four Seasons, and she was in the Tom Hanks movie Nothing in Common.
I think Alan Alda might be in The Four Seasons.
You're absolutely right. Good work. Uh-huh. Simon McCorkindale played Philip Fitzroyce. You know him from such things as Jaws 3D. He was in Falcon Crest for 59 episodes.
I watched Falcon Crest. Lorenzo Lamas was in that.
He was indeed.
It was Wine Country Dynasty.
That's exactly what it was. He was on Death in the Nile in 1978. He was on a TV series called Counter-Strike, which I'm unfamiliar with, 66 episodes. And of course, he was the Manimal. Let's see, Louis Gossett Jr., Academy
Award going winner. On eBay and look for vintage Manimal t-shirts. I think, that's a thing that needs to happen.
You're telling me. You know Louis Gossett Jr. from An Officer and a Gentleman, Enemy Mine, where he was reunited with Dennis Quaid. Jaws 3D. He was in three episodes of the Roots miniseries. And he used to play basketball for the Boston Celtics back in the 60s. So there you go.
Huh.
Leah Thompson played Kellyanne Bukowski. You know her from, let's see, Back to the Future, of course, which a couple years later. The Year of Spectacular Men, unfamiliar. The Trouble with the Truth, unfamiliar. And the TV series Switched at Birth for 104 episodes. There you go.
Yeah, don't know any of this nonsense.
Oh, very upsetting. Shall we go to the ratings?
Do it.
Jaws 3D currently 11% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That seems really low.
Do you know what the audience gave it?
34.
17. Very upsetting. I agree, surprisingly low. But let's look at what the critics say.
No, I got to stop you right there. I was Googling Manimal t-shirts. If you go to manimal.com, you can, in fact, get Manimal t-shirts.
Oh, no. There it is.
A vintage 1983 Manimal t-shirt will set you back $30 on the eBay.
I mean,
or you can just go get bootleg ones that are right now.
Manimal. I'm not going to lie. I love wearing t-shirts that only I get. Honestly. And then every now and again, somebody will look at it and kind of give you the look like I'm right there with you, brother. And then it makes it all worth it.
Even better. Amazon.com, $13.99. Manimal t-shirt. Don't got to be vintage.
Does
it
not
only
have
has
to be,
to be bootleg. Absolutely. It does come in a package from China. Don't expect to get it early. It will come, like I said, on a boat from China where it will make 12 stops before entering U.S. Customs.
And you'll wonder if they lost your order.
And then 6 years later, an empty bag will arrive with nothing in it but a bill. Boom.
Janet Maslin. It's harmless but unsurprising. 2.5 out of 5. Variety staff, always love that. Surprisingly tepid.
Is it a surprise? Is it really a surprise?
Surprisingly.
As soon as you see that 3D next to it, you know it's going to be tepid.
Oh, no question. Matt Singer of Screen Crush, I was reading this. No movie with Dennis Quaid holding a basset hound's ears to keep them out of his water bowl while pouring himself some coffee can be all bad. Do you remember that scene?
Yes.
Because we were watching, we're like, what the hell is he doing? The dog, okay, he's pouring himself coffee with one hand. The dog is sitting up on the counter eating out of his bowl, and Dennis Quaid is literally just holding his ears up. And then no one references it other than to say, get the dog off the counter. It is so bizarre. That was one of those heavy Coke days.
It was a heavy Coke day, and it's called We're Ad Libbing This Shit.
No question. Okay, so what do you got? What is your rating for Jaws 3D?
Well, it's so goofable, although I cannot give it a 3, which is my average 80s movie that is all right. So I'm going to have to give it 2.85. Crazy, shitty 3D fish heads floating around my face out of 5. Because it's watchable and goofable, it needed a lot more kills.
I agree.
Normally, I don't need a lot of kills, but it should at least have a little bit of scariness. Is that too much? Is that too much?
I think this movie's a PG movie as well.
It's PG. G movie. There's no sense of fear whatsoever. No. You are sleeping like a baby. You can show this to your infant children, and they will just continue on with their day. No trauma. It's trauma-free watching.
I'm pretty much right there with you. I'm going to give it a solid 3 out of 5. I'm pressing my face against the glass to look at the disembodied head.
With your head. You got to push it.
It is harmless. I mean, you figure it's a Jaws movie. There'll be at least one scene where you go like, oh, my God, why'd they show that? No. There's not. No. They show the body of Shelby for a couple seconds, and like a worm crawls out of its mouth or something like that for no reason. Other than that, it is.
Don't expect snappy dialogue like the first one. No.
Very upset. There's no moment where Dennis Quaid.
How can we make this dialogue less interesting? Yeah, let's get that guy.
There's no scene where Simon McCorkadale turns towards Dennis Quaid and goes, "Let me tell you about this horrible trip I took where everyone was eaten by sharks except for me." There's never that moment.
No.
So very upsetting. But I go to the mat. I want to know what happened to Mike and Catherine. Did they go to Venezuela? Did those kids make it work? The sad thing is that in Jaws the Revenge, Mike is now the marine biologist, and there is no Catherine. He's married with children to somebody else. So I guess Venezuela didn't work out the way he anticipated.
Or very maybe upset. It did. Perhaps he clearly assumed her identity.
He did.
Buried her in the sand, and here we go.
Very upsetting. Anywho, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Go to our page on Facebook, on Twitter, we're on TikTok, Instagram, we're on Threads, we're all over the place. We are also on YouTube, so you could be watching this right now. If you like to see our smiling faces, you could do that as well. You can also email us, the podcast that wouldn't die, at Gmail. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere the finer podcasts are available. So don't be afraid to like, share, rate, review. Would you please? Treat yourself! What we try to do is share viewer, listener feedback about our previous episodes. I have some letters here from people who enjoyed Don't Look Now. David McKee said, yes, I've seen Don't Look Now several times. My wife won't watch it again, though. Two words, Evil Venice, which is true. And Julia Wood Sheehan says, OMG, not a month goes by that CN or I don't make references to this movie. So there you go, which is a lot of references. Next week, we'll be doing the science fiction action classic Face Off, with Nick Cage, John Travolta, CCH Pounder. It's an all-star cast. Gina Gershon is in this one for some reason. CCH Pounder. You can watch it on Amazon, or actually AMC Plus, AMC, Paramount Plus, or you can pay full freight to just rent it on one of Apple TV or Amazon Prime or Vudu or yada, yada, yada. So send in your favorite scenes, favorite quotes, comments, and questions, and we may talk about it on the show. So good times had by all. So thank you very much, and be well.